And welcome to episode 47 of Speak Beastie for October 22nd, 2017. I'm Claire.
I'm Aurelia.
I'm Ariel. And today we'd like to introduce one of our new official hosts, Amy.
Yay! Hey, guys.
Hey, Amy.
Hey, Amy. Want to tell us a little bit about yourself, just in case people don't remember you from past episodes?
Sure. Last time I was on the show was actually right after Fantastic Beasts, the pre-screenings, came out. So that episode where we talked about what to expect. So I am a Hufflepuff, which is perfect for this show. I'm so excited.
Yes.
So many Hufflepuffs.
Am I the only non-Hufflepuff here?
I'm a little bit Ravenclaw, so I don't know. Well,
yeah, it seems
fine.
Like
it's fine.
Yeah. So I don't know what else to say about me. I live
in Ilvermorny house.
Oh, Ilvermorny, yes. I'm a Thunderbird and
yay.
I live in upstate New York. And I'm currently working as a news reporter.
That's so cool.
Very
so what are you doing for MuggleNet aside from Speak Beastie?
Oh, yes, MuggleNet, the most important, right? I give you my Muggle job. I don't give you the important stuff. So I'm the creative team manager. I oversee mostly the videos that go up on the website and on our Facebook page, and also some of the writing that goes on, like the editorials and listicles and all those fun quizzes and things like that. So yeah. I've been with MuggleNet for, gosh, I think it's been over 3 years, 4 years now. I don't know.
Wow.
Lost track.
Long time.
Isn't that just the way it goes?
Last time I met Amy in person for, you know, MuggleNet Live, we had a heated discussion about pizza and wings.
We did. Yes. Ario could not understand how you eat pizza and wings together. And
yeah,
we still have to
sense.
Buy you pizza and wings so that you can understand this.
We can eat anything together, basically.
But one thing is like American, the other thing is Italian. Like, why would you put those together?
Well, American pizza isn't so much Italian pizza.
Yeah,
so.
That's true.
It's a little, we give it a little leeway. gosh, it's too early for me to be talking about pizza and wings.
It's never too early. It's making me hungry.
Not me at all. I'm like, whoa.
That's the Hufflepuff in me coming out. I could eat at any time.
Oh, well, we're so happy to have you on, Amy, because you are amazing and I know you're going to bring so much to this already amazing team, but, you know, like, adding extra amazing is never a bad thing. So, you know, sprinkling a little more on.
A double dose of amazing.
Yeah. That's you, Amy.
That's me.
I mean, you've already, the first two letters of your name, amazing.
It's true.
I tried to make it fit and I couldn't, but you know, it's there.
No, like we in like the 90s, wasn't there like a talking doll that was called like Amazing Amy or something?
That sounds
making
familiar.
That up?
No, it sounds familiar.
Either way, it's cool.
It really
That's totally off track, but that just reminded me of that.
See, I was just going to say we have like three hosts with an A as a starting letter of the name. And then there's Claire.
Sorry, I'm.
We're brought down to like a B average now.
Oh no, three versus one. That definitely weights it to at least an A minus.
Yeah, you're right. I was never good at averaging. I always had to go to like a website and like type in my grades and like how many hours I was taking, and then I was like, okay, good. This is what I'm averaging.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you! Yes you! The magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint. Just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more! Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees. And how?
Now that I don't have Michael or probably anyone else here to make fun of me for how I say this, I'm just going to jump right into it.
See, that's the part that I'm most excited for.
She's like, it's happening. It's real life. I heard Megan last episode.
Yeah.
She made me sound like Californian in a way. She's like, and now for the Phoenix Register. And I'm like, I don't sound like that, do I? I think, like, I know I'm from Florida, but I'm also from Tennessee. I don't know what, I've never been to California. I don't know what's happening there. Oh, it's okay, though. I'm just gonna do it, you know? No fear of judgment. No fear of judgment with this group. And now for the Phoenix Register. So, myself and Claire have a little bit of news. We won't be on quite as frequently as we had been in the past, and that's for different reasons, but I know Claire wanted to talk a little bit about why that is, so take it away, Claire.
Yeah, thank you, Ariel. So, I mean, as listeners of the show will know, I'm not actually on that frequently anyway. I blame time zones.
Yeah.
So I am hoping to continue with Speak Beastie as frequently or as infrequently as I have been over the last year or two. But I am stepping down from MuggleNet. I've been with the site for 5 years now, which is longer than anything else I've done, apart from school. And but yeah, it just felt time to focus on my Muggle career, as it were, as I've been calling it to everyone, which probably doesn't help. but yeah, it was like, it's been ridiculously good. I think when I sort of think about all the stuff I've done with MuggleNet, from being on telly to visiting Hogwarts in three different countries to interviewing Eddie Redmayne in Dumbledore's office, it's been pretty ridiculous. But yeah, it's time to say goodbye. I've written a load of emails to the partners that I've been sort of, you know, talking to over the last few years, and just sort of saying I'm hanging up my robes and the magic is ending.
Aww.
And I had some leaving drinks with the London team yesterday called the Parting of the Ways. So, you know, I'm really dragging it out and milking the whole bloody thing. But yeah, so I'm going to be wrapping up over the next few days, and probably by the time this episode goes out, I will be sort of officially off-boarded, as it were. I've booted out all the Facebook groups and will have significantly less notifications to get through every day, which I'm not sure whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But yeah, I will still be a Speak Beastie host because I'm very much looking forward to the next installment of Fantastic Beasts. And I can't just do it on my own. I need to do it with a whole community of nerds.
I don't even know what to say to that. You made me so sad.
I'm just glad I met you in London this past December.
Yes, when we were like almost queuing up outside the stage door at Cursed Child.
to try and meet Jamie, and then Jamie didn't show.
Yeah, never showed. One day. New York. So I'm holding up in New York. Yeah, so the thing is, I'm leaving MuggleNet, but I already have multiple things booked in leading up to the next few months, because the British Library exhibition will be opening soon. And then a whole group of us are planning a trip to hopefully go and see Kershaw in New York. So I'm not really leaving. I'm just doing a lot less work.
And if you come to New York, you can meet me.
Yay! There are so many people I haven't met. And I didn't make it to MuggleNet Live, unfortunately, which I would have helped me meet poor people. But yeah, so
I've got to meet you, Claire.
I don't know. You'll have to find a way to get to New York, Ariel.
I'll do it. I'll do it for you.
Yes. Oh yeah. And hopefully I'll be able to do some more traveling around the US. I seem to only ever go to Orlando or New York, and mainly New York. But yeah, hopefully I'll be able to spread my wings elsewhere at some point. money depending. That old chestnut.
That little problem there.
Talking of travel, Newt's trying to travel.
Yeah, that was a great segue. We meant to do that.
Yes. It only took us, like, what, 10 minutes to get there?
Take our time.
You know, we had a really good plan, though. We planned that out perfectly. Well, yes, speaking of travel and the news, we are going to talk about the little bit of news that we got about our man Newt. And where he's going, or where he's not going, we should say, because in an article that we published on MuggleNet, we talked about the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them sequel, which we will be calling it until we find out an official name. But we did get a snapshot of a travel application for Newt's Commander, and it gave us quite a bit of information. Actually, you had to have really good eyesight in order to be able to read it. But it talks about, oh, let's see here. Well, it gives his name, obviously, his nationality, it gives his address, which we were all pretty excited about because is it a real place? Is it a made up place like Privet Drive? We don't know.
Also, if it's in London, we've got a very high chance of seeing it. Oh, sorry, Ariel.
Do what?
I think the address is, it says it's going to be is in London, 9 potentially Sherringford Square. We can't quite read it, but the fact that it's London is a good sign because we know that there's going to be some scenes in London. So hopefully we'll see Newt's house, which could be exciting. I feel like there's going to be even more beasts there. I'm also excited because he's south of the river. Oh yeah, he's southeast. I'm southwest, but that's exciting.
Practically neighbors, even though you know he. This was like 100 years ago, but
parallel universe.
Yes, we also canonically have his birthday, his height, which it says 6'1", but for a while people thought it said 6'7", which was very. we were like, that seems a little too tall, but yeah, that's not his height. It gives just his general overall appearance, which. As we have seen the movies, we know what that is, so that's not really new information. It does say he is pending for his travel. Oh, no, wait. It's notice of travel permit application denial, and it's pending. So...
Yeah, that stamp's quite confusing. So it's in red font. It says it's been denied.
Yeah.
And it looks like the pending is on top of the red font. So it is a bit strange.
Yeah, like it's been
but
stamped
But I do quite
on.
Like the red font. The reason for the denial code, which obviously is implying that he's been denied travel somewhere, is subject uncooperative and evasive on reasons for last trip. So I'd say it's fairly clear he's trying to get back to New York, isn't he? And I'd say that's probably most likely. Going back to see Tina, and perhaps the issues with Frank may have may damage his prospects of going back to see her, which is worrying for their future relationship.
Yeah. Well, love will find a way.
Aww.
He's got to deliver that book, man. Got to happen. Yeah.
You can't just mail it.
No.
It's gotta be delivered. Oh, goodness. That's where the real romance lies, is that he came and brought it. The article goes more in depth because it does mention that the photo cuts off right above immediate family members. Mm-hmm. Cuts off right above immediate family members. Even though we do know about Theseus and that he'll be appearing in some shape or form in the next movie. We don't know if it's in a flashback or if they'll be, you know, bumping into each other, whatever's going to happen. But it would have been interesting to see more about his immediate family because in the Fantastic Beasts book, we hear a little bit about how he grew up on a hippogriff farm with his family. I think it was just his mom that was mentioned. I can't remember. I should just walk over to my desk and grab the book.
No, I'm also fairly sure it's just the mother that is mentioned.
Yes, thank you. So it's not just me imagining that. I have an interesting question. Maybe it's not interesting. Maybe I've just never had to do fingerprints before. But it says right thumb, then it says Mercury, Apollo, Saturn, and Jupiter. Is that what they've named the fingers?
Yeah, that's not normal. I don't think.
I was like, is that how they do fingerprints? Like, I've literally never heard that before. So I was like,
I've never had my fingerprints taken, but I'm pretty sure they're not named after the planets. Just
guessing. I was just gonna say, like, I had that, but in German. So I don't know. German's differently, maybe.
I just didn't know if that was like standard issue or if that's something they do in the wizarding world. So there's another thing. They name their fingerprints after the planets.
It does feel like it could be quite magical. You know, something the wizarding world might do. I'm sort of having a look to see whether it's quite hard to search fingerprinting.
Yeah, I was like Googling too. It's not coming up.
Are fingerprints named after planets? Enter.
It's giving me like the pattern names, but not like the finger names. But like, I would imagine they would just be like thumb, index finger. You know what I mean?
Right?
Like,
yeah,
that makes the most sense to me. But again, it's the wizarding world. Who knows? They have their reasons. So yes, that was Newt's travel application, which I think when we first were getting little tidbits before the first movie. It was stuff like this that tied into the movie, but we never actually saw in the movie.
I could imagine it that being like on someone's desk, but we're not really seeing it.
Right.
Yeah, it's not like he's going to be waving it around.
Look at my application.
Yeah.
No, like mine's better.
A plot point.
I feel like this is going to be a setup for the, you know, the opening story. If he can't get back to New York, then how does things play out with him and Tina? Is there a next step?
Yeah.
And we know that, you know, activities taking place in New York, London, Paris, and it would make sense if maybe things move towards the Paris side of things more. So I think it's probably going to be a plot point, but not a big one. It'll be sort of early on in the film. Yeah. He gets denied something, and then he has to find an alternative way.
They were like, so we can't meet in America, let's meet in France because it's halfway there.
Yeah, sounds great.
Not.
I just had the dumbest thought when you said back to New York, because it made me think of Back to the Future. And I was like, I would love a moment where like Newt is just standing in the street and then out comes a DeLorean and Dumbledore hops out. And he's like, Newt, we've got to go back to New York. Just that is something that I would... Oh, and it'd be Jude Law Dumbledore. It wouldn't be, you know. Oh, yeah. Okay, that's it. I want it. I don't think it's going to happen.
And what a great name for, like, a song on a soundtrack. Back to New York.
Yeah.
I can hear it now.
Oh, gosh. Except it'd be The Power of Love. Because that was the official song for Back to the Future. Oh, gosh. Okay. This is not a Back to the Future podcast. So let's get back on track. Let's get back on track. Hop in the DeLorean. So we got a little bit more news, which we'll talk bare bones right now. No one cares about that.
I just got it. Sorry. A little slow.
It wasn't that great, I'll admit. But yeah, we'll talk a little bit about it, only because we're going to talk at length about it during main discussion, which Amy so generously is leading and has absolutely filled the doc with amazing information. So, Pottermore has dropped a list of characters that will appear in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the sequel, which we really need to find a shorter way to talk about that. We'll just talk about the second movie. We'll just say in the second movie.
How about Fantastic Beasts 2?
FB2. Yeah.
That's a very, very short version.
So Pottermore dropped yet another list of characters that will appear in the second Fantastic Beasts. And we will be getting more familiar names, but we want to keep you in suspense. And we're going to talk about that again more at length during the actual main discussion. So that's really it for the Phoenix Register for this episode.
It's pretty exciting.
So Claire, do you want to take it away with the outpost?
Yes. The outpost. So the two comments this week cover some of the stuff we discussed last time. The first one is from Anne. Hello, Beasties. As far as Monster Michel will pop up in Fantastic Beasts 2, my answer is what I think is referred to as a go with me here. Okay, right. That's what she's saying. Right. Going with you, Anne. According to the Disney Dish with Jim Hill, if you ask a cast member at the Wizarding World Hogsmeade what happened to Merlinwood, the land that used to be where Wizarding World is now, they will tell you that Merlinwood was a magical facade to disguise Hogsmeade, but now they've lowered the spell and allowed muggles to visit. This explains the please respect the spell's limits signs at the entrances. If too much magic is cast too quickly, the Merlinwood facade will snap back into place. So actually, I think what she's referring to there is the general thing we know that Hogsmeade and, Hogwheat, oh my God. I think what Anne's referring to there is that, you know, we know that Hogwarts is under a spell so the muggles can't see it. And so she goes on to say, this ties into Monster Michel in that I think it's an all-wizarding settlement like Hogsmeade, that they used a magical facade like Merlinwood to disguise what was really happening there. Add a few muggle-repelling charms and you have a small community living in peace, not being bothered by anyone. Since Snoo's visit would bring him there before the Abbey reopened, it would be interesting to see an outsider among what must be a tight-knit community, especially if they have some reason to not like or distrust him. Like, say, if something got out of the case. Dun, dun, dun.
Ah. So, yeah,
I personally feel, and their next post is along the same lines as I think, I don't think we're going to see a lot of France and this little... area is not in sort of central Paris, but going on to the second one, who's the similar theory, Kitty, she says, I reckon that Joe specifically wrote the Ilvermorny houses so they cannot be compared to the Hogwarts houses, and so bad and good stereotypical connotations don't get carried over. This also may be the reason she hasn't given us so much information, in a way that it must be just repeating what she's done before and making it more comparable to the houses at Hogwarts, which I think there's a part of that, and I think also there's potentially also a part of the fact that we're just not going to see the schools and therefore there's not as much to show. Because she goes on to say, I also have a feeling that the island that you were discussing, which we've just mentioned, won't show up in the film, but rather the film we base in a more central part of Paris where the lives of no-mag muggles are at stake. Do the French have another term for non-wizards? And actually, I have a thought on that latter question, and I personally feel like the word for muggle in these films is just going to be whatever the French word for muggle is in the books. So I had a quick look, and I think it's moldu. I don't know if we've discussed that before. But yeah, I feel like it would make sense if we go to new countries where Harry Potter has already been translated, that we just use, they use the wording that has been translated for those editions. But yeah, so... so that's that summary. But I agree with what Kitty was saying. I don't know about you guys, but I it's a beautiful place, and the photo that was shared over on Twitter looks lovely. But yeah, I don't see something like this appearing in the show, mainly because you wouldn't be able to film there. That would be very tricky to film there. And we know they're filming most stuff in the UK, as you know, it leaves in the studios. And to recreate a whole village would be most intriguing. What do you guys think?
I think the most we'll get is a mention, I think.
Yeah. I was not aware of the Hogsmeade Merlinwood thing that was going on at the Wizarding World. I thought that was really interesting, and I like that Anne, the whole go with me here, I like that she went so in depth to think in terms of, you know, something that is happening like in our real life world at a theme park could be something that they do like in the movies. Like, I really appreciate that kind of theorizing, that kind of, well, you know, what if they do this because of this?
Yeah, and it definitely makes sense because, as you know, because there is that in place in Hogwarts in the book. So obviously, with Universal have taken those premises for the interactors to use when they're engaging with the audience.
Yeah. I honestly don't even remember what that part of the park looked like before the Wizarding World, even though I had been there many times before. I think I just like pushed it out of my mind. It's just always been the Wizarding World now. But it would be, I, as much as I would love to see so many things in these movies, it's unrealistic, honestly. The reason being, you know, we sit here and we talk at length about, oh, well, what if this shows up? And, oh, maybe this could happen. And it's all these what ifs, but we're not the writers. We're just the watchers and the listeners, and the discussers. We don't actively get any say in what happens. It's really cool when we do come up with something that does end up in the movies. But unfortunately, I feel like this is one of those instances where this is something we wish we could see that maybe we just won't. Maybe it'll be discussed. I can't remember who just said that. Like, maybe they'll mention it in passing, which would be nice, which would be a nice little nod. But yeah, even like with the travel application, like, I think that's just going to be a little, it's going to be something, but not, you know, the whole movie. So
you say that, when I was listening to, and we're going to discuss this right now, but when I was listening to the episode where we talk about Nicholas Flamel, I was like, oh, nice idea, but nah. And I have very much had to eat my words on that. But yeah, so over to you, Amy. This is going to be a good chat.
All right. So on to our main discussion, which is the casting news. So we've got quite the list of new characters. And one of those is Nicholas Flamel. Ooh. Boom, called it.
Yes. Thank you.
And he will be played by Brontis I'm going to mess this up. Brontis Jodorowsky?
We'll roll with it.
That might be how you say it. It's a Mexican actor.
So I threw this note in. I was wondering, this could be completely non-thing, but I don't know whether they're going to play Nicholas Flamel as French or British, or if they have they've hired a Mexican actor, maybe he'll be Mexican and maybe we'll go to Mexico. But that could be completely random and not likely at all. But that could be. I've got a feeling they're going to just keep traveling in these movies and it's going to become global to work with the global fandom. So it'd be cool if we started seeing some other areas of America.
Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely think that this is going to travel around places. And we'll discuss this a little later on, but looking at this list, it's quite international. So it definitely might be laying the groundwork for something here. But Nicholas Flamel, obviously, we discussed this. Well, I wasn't on, but you guys discussed this a few episodes ago. So we probably won't dive too far into that. Just kind of, that's one of them.
And check out, we've got a few articles on the site with some theories, and obviously we discussed the theories on the show. So yeah, if you want some more of that, head on over to MuggleNut.
Yes, plenty of that. Also cast is a character called Spielman, played by Wolf Roth. I'm going to say that again. That was weird. Also cast is a character called Spielman, who is played by Wolf Roth. Roth is a German actor who started in theater and moved into television and film. He was on German TV shows Derek and, I'm going to butcher this, to Tort.
Do you want me to say it?
Yes, please.
So that TV show is called Tatort, which is basically just crime scene in German. It's a crime show, so.
Okay.
It's like the longest running German TV show. It's like been on for more than 40 years. So it's basically our Doctor Who.
Interesting.
Just less cool.
Yeah, and so Roth also plays Sigmund Freud in a movie called Holmes and Watson that is currently in post-production, and it's slated to be released in 2018 also. I don't know if that's coming out before Fantastic Beasts 2, but might get the chance to see him in that before Fantastic Beasts comes out, which could be interesting. And then Spielman, talking about the character himself, I kind of dived in and tried to find like little hints. I don't know if this is going to help or not, but we all know a spiel is a story or speech intended to persuade or be used as an excuse, but is usually met with skepticism or contempt. It can also mean to recite, like rattle off facts or whatever. So who do we think Spielman's going to be?
So I've got two ideas. Both, one based on the name, saying spiel or story, and we know that Jo does like to play with her names, is that maybe he's involved in the circus that we know about. He could be involved in that. But then also the fact that he's a German actor, and we know that Grindelwald is from not necessarily Germany, but that area of Europe. It could potentially, he's involved with Grindelwald. He could be part of his gang. Especially, it was the bit, actually, that speech intended to persuade. We know sort of
Grindelwald is,
yeah,
like
quite persuasive. So a possible ally for Gellert, or in the circus. I think especially if he's playing a German character, I think it's probably likely we'll see him in Paris as opposed to any like New York or London scenes. But yeah, we shall see.
Do we think there's a possibility that he's not human? Because I'm just thinking sometimes when we get only like a first name or like last name, just like a singular name, it's like someone who's not.
I like that idea. See, I was more on the line with the circus, like that's being more like the conductor or, you know, not conductor, but director or something.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if we're talking about Spielman as like the name, the German word Spiel is the name, is the word for game. So the first half of his, since he might be a German character, and that would fit in with the circus idea again.
It would, yeah.
I'm wondering also, and we're going to touch on this in a bit, but I think when they haven't given a full name could potentially also be spoilers. I don't know quite because we haven't heard Spielman before, maybe not in this case, but I feel like there's a reason why they hold back on that. And I don't necessarily think it's because it's a one-named character. I think it might be more that it's a spoiler, possibly.
Yeah, it could be.
Mm.
Right. Any other thoughts before we go to the next?
Only that, as with more we're going to see, it's nice to see them casting outside of the UK and American bubble. So, yeah, that's cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so our next character cast is someone named Arnold Guzman, and he's played by Cornell S. John. John played Glenstorm in the Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian, and in Captain America: Civil War, he was the King of Wakanda's personal diplomat. He most recently appeared in a TV show. Yeah. As soon as I looked at his picture, I was like, I know this guy. He's in a lot of things. He was also in the TV show Victoria as a former American slave, Jonas Barrett. So he's in a lot of things. Like, if you just Google him and look at the picture, like, you'll definitely recognize him.
Yeah.
So Guzman, as a surname, it derives from the village of Guzman in Spanish region of Burgos. And the meaning that I found on a few different sites is good man.
Mm.
So I don't know if that means he's an ally, maybe? I don't know.
Or it could be a misnomer.
Yeah.
It could be. Newt looks up the name. Oh, that means good man. He must be okay. Turns out he's Grindelwald's right-hand man.
Yeah.
Oh, he could also be Grindelwald because, you know, Grindelwald starts with a G, Graves starts with a G, Guzman starts with a G.
This is going to be like, if this became a trend.
It's going to get real confusing. We're going to have to, like, like how we call Grindelwald Grindel Graves. It's going to have to be, like, Grindel Graves Goose. I don't know.
It's not becoming a tongue twister. So my feeling with Guzman, and we're going to talk about Travers very soon, but both him and Derek Riddle, Cornell John and Derek Riddle, who's been cast as Travers, they're both kind of solid British actors who, like I said, like we kind of recognise Cornell John and I kind of recognise Derek Riddle as kind of, they pop up in those kind of TV dramas or they play like solid characters, like small characters in movies, but makes me feel like they might, so we know... we don't know much about Theseus, but we know that he works for the Ministry, or that he was an Aura. That's I found that on the wiki, so I think we know that. And I feel like these sort of middle-aged men, British men, might be Ministry officials. And if we've seen this travel document from Newt stamped by the Ministry of Magic, the likelihood is we're going to see. I imagine we'd see that in the Ministry of Magic, or maybe we'll see it at his house. But I feel like these guys aren't going to be huge characters. I think they might pitch up if we see the Ministry again.
Mm. Possibly. Yeah.
I like that idea.
And I think it also, and maybe we can go straight to Travers actually, because I feel like the fact that Travers is one of the pure blood families would play him well if he was a Ministry man. And you know, this, right. they're the kind of families that would be hired. But I'll let you carry on, Amy, before I continue okay. stealing.
Well, yeah, let's go to Travers and we can backpedal a little bit. So also going off of what Claire is discussing, Torquil Travers was also cast. He's played by Derek Riddell. And as Claire said, Riddell is a pretty recognizable Scottish television actor. He's best known for his role in a British TV show called The Book Group, another TV show called No Angels. He has popped up on Ugly Betty as a character named Stuart, and he's also appeared on Doctor Who. So he has quite an extensive back history of television roles. And obviously Travers, we know that name. He's probably an ancestor of the Travers who helped murder Order of the Phoenix member Marlene McKinnon and her family. The Travers are one of the sacred 28 pureblood families, and they are included in the pureblood directory published in the 1930s, which would be a few years after
Fantastic Beasts 3.
Yes, yes. So Travers is an English and a French surname, and the name was used to describe a man who lived near a bridge or a ford, sometimes used as an occupational title for a man who collected tolls on a bridge. So, that's Travers.
Maybe if we go with the ministry man theory, maybe he would be in charge of like external affairs and be like especially responsible for France because he might have family in France or you know speak French a bit or something.
Yeah,
that'd be cool. And I think also just if Newt's having to go up to claim saying why he needs like you know travel documents, there could be something in that. I think potentially you're going to see more like of the international what are they called? International Security. Oh my god, brain. What is that organization called? The International Confederate of Wizards. So backtrack.
There it is.
But yeah, so with the sort of international element of the story so far, then maybe there could be an element of the International Confederate of Wizards. I don't think I've said that right. But I'm gonna carry on. And we've seen a bit of them. It was them we saw in Fantastic Beasts 1, right? When Newt gets like arrives in his case brought by Tina. Was that who was there? I need to rewatch the film. I haven't watched it in a few months.
I don't know. I think so. I think that's kind of what I thought when I was watching it.
But I think the fact that he's mainly a TV actor, and he's the type of actor that like he just pops up on British television. I swear, like I see him in like every third TV drama. Particularly BBC dramas. He's one of those actors. So I feel like he'll have kind of a couple of scenes, and that'll probably be it.
Yeah.
But it's just cool seeing some of these names pop up. It's going to be exciting to see. You know, we already know we've got Lestrange, we've got Travis, mm-hmm. and we've got another person to discuss in a second. Like, it's exciting.
Yes, it's all coming together.
I could definitely see him be like a ministry worker that just going to be like annoying and be a pain. Be like, no, I'm not going to be like, let you go into that country and then you'd have to go without official documents or something.
Denied.
Pending. Denied but pending.
So, speaking of names that are recognizable that we're seeing pop up, we also have a Rosier who will be in the film, played by Poppy Corby-Touche. We don't have a first name for Rosier, which could be a spoiler as well. So Corby-Touche is a French-English actress, and she's been in TV shows like The Royals as a character named Prudence. She played Dominique in The Collection. Rosier, again, is the surname of a known Death Eater in the Harry Potter series, also part of the Sacred 28 pureblood families, just like Travers. Evan Rosier died shortly after the First Wizarding War, after Igor Karkaroff was captured. Dumbledore tells Harry in The Goblet of Fire that Evan Rosier did not go quietly, and he's the one who took a chunk of Alistair Moody's nose with him. Another Rosier was one of Voldemort's earliest supporters, accompanying him to Hogwarts when Tom Riddle met with Dumbledore to ask for a teaching position. And I have that quote from Dumbledore, quote, "Not Rosier, Mulciber, Dalahov, waiting for your return. What devoted friends traveling so far away in the snow and the night just to wish you good luck and trying to get a teacher position."
I feel like they're the same Rosier, were they not? I mean, we're not a Harry Potter podcast, and this is probably not a plot point to discuss now, but I feel like that's the same, the one and the same, the Rosier that died and the Rosier that's waiting for his return. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, I think there's some debate on that, but like, yeah, I kind of agree it could be. I think the debate is that the one who accompanied Tom Riddle could have been older and might have been Evan Rosier's father.
Yeah, it could be like an age thing. We're not quite sure. Because that was when Tom Riddle, he was looking like, he's still looking pretty good, but he was on the decline because of evil. So it's like, he wasn't quite Voldemort yet. Like, he was mostly, but he still had, like, his human features. Because I remember that being pointed out by, I guess it was Harry in the Pensieve.
Yeah.
When he's like, he still had like his handsome features, but you could tell it was kind of.
Yeah. Like his eyes were starting to be like a little red.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it definitely feels like the timing would play a big role. Because when you think about the time of these movies and then when that was going on, like maybe this Rosier is, oh gosh, math.
So this Rosier is definitely not, the Rosier that we, whether it's one or two roses in the Harry Potter series, is definitely not the Rosier in this. Because we know that like Voldemort, oh God, timeline. But yeah, Voldemort is not, that sort of stuff's all happening in like the 60s and 70s, isn't it? Voldemort was
I was going to say like this 40s. Could be a, like this is maybe a grandparent or a parent or even just like a relative. Like we have no idea. Mm-hmm. But as for Evan Rosier, that could be, we're not sure on the, you know, on the age, if that's, you know, the same person that accompanied Tom Riddle and then took Moody's nose chunk. So
nose chunk. Yes. The Rosiers also married into the Black family. Druella Rosier married Cygnus Black III and had three daughters, Bellatrix, Andromeda, and Narcissa.
So maybe, what if, no, wait.
I think she's Joella.
Okay.
Timing-wise, I'm not 100%. But if you Google this actress, which, I mean, she's bloody beautiful, but she has something about like a young Helena Bonham Carter about her. She's got quite like sort of heavy-lidded eyes, and she does look like Helena Bonham Carter, very slightly. But I don't know about the date. So I was looking at the wiki, and Bellatrix is supposedly born in 1951, which... That would mean if, say, Rosia is in this and it is Joella, she would have to be, like, I say, if she was 20 in 1927, I think that would make her 42 in 1951. Mental math's not great. Which is quite old to have her first daughter, because she then has three others.
But in the Wizarding World,
yeah,
it's not that old.
Yeah, it's the thing. So maybe that's a possibility. But yeah, I don't quite know about the dates. The dates might not work, but there is something so Helena Bonham Carter about her that I feel like maybe. But then also, even if she's not Joella, but I think the fact that they haven't released her first name is a big hint, because we do have quite a few like names, so we'd be able to like match people up. I think there's a strong possibility that she is friends with Lestrange. I can't seem to find, with Leta, I can't seem to find a age for this actress.
She looks young.
Yeah, but she's been working for a while. So I feel like at least she's in her late 20s, potentially in her early 30s, unless she started at like 12, because she went to fashion school and then she was a model and then she was in a band and now she's been acting for a few years. So she's got to be in her late 20s, which would put her at a similar age as...
Zoe Kravitz?
Sorry, yeah. So that would put her as the same age as Zoe Kravitz playing Leta, which maybe they're school friends. So maybe Lestrange and Rosia and Scamander were all at school together, and maybe Rosia is, and she's of this side of the Wizarding World. Maybe she's in with Grindelwald. But yeah, I feel like whilst a couple of these castings, I think, are minor characters, I think she could be an interesting one. And I think the fact they haven't revealed her first name is a big, big thing. Or they're just teasing us.
I could also see that she would pop up with like a flashback scene with Newt and Theseus at school, probably.
We've seen some Hogwarts robes, so if they do go back to Hogwarts, we could get a flashback to them all at school together. Oh my god, that'd be so cute. I want to see them all at school together.
What I think is interesting, too, is I know a lot of people think that heavily lidded eyes and the dark hair and stuff that Bellatrix is known for, Bellatrix and Andromeda, I know a lot of fans think that that comes from the Rosier side of the family tree, just because none of the other Blacks are really described that way. I think that's interesting that she does look like the other people who are cast as like Bellatrix and stuff. So, I mean,
yeah,
I think it could be Joella. I'm down with that.
Yeah.
And it would be exciting. I think, I know some people are a bit nervous about seeing too much of the world created, but I think in terms of, you know, like playing into the Harry Potter storyline. But I feel like if we get these snapshots of the stuff that happened, you know, before the Harry Potter timeline, I think I'm really excited by it, because I feel like you could work out, there could be no mention of, well, there would be no mention of Bellatrix because she's not born yet. But if we just saw Joella over, you know, a film or two, who turns out is, you know, Bellatrix's mum, I think that's exciting. I got quite giddy reading that and then looking into it. I was like, oh, this could be really cool, because it's not touching directly on the Harry Potter story, because it can't, but just having those little things dropped in here and there. And I think it'd be, you know, considering how Bellatrix turns out, it'd be interesting to see what her mother was like.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because the other two Lestranges are actually fairly normal. the Blacks are not Lestranges, the other two Black sisters, like, they are. Yeah, Narcissa, yes, she's a Malfoy, but like, she's pretty ordinary. And then obviously Andromeda married Tonks. So
we have one more character to go over. And this character also only has a singular name. So Bunty is played by Victoria Yeats. And Victoria Yeats is known for her role as Sister Winifred in Call the Midwife. And Bunty, I looked into this because I was like, this is such a weird name. I had to do some back research. It's apparently a British pet name. I didn't know this. I don't know. Maybe Claire knew this.
I didn't know this, but I when I heard that name, Bunty, it feels like a nickname. It doesn't feel like a real name. It feels like something she's called, like, Bunt something. Like, her surname is, like, a fuller thing, and then you just short, like, that's quite a, I think that's quite a Britishism, if you take a long surname and you shorten it to something else.
But yeah, it's
cute. You can go on that one.
So apparently it's a term of endearment. I thought this was really weird. Okay, so some people think it's derived from a dialect name for a lamb using the Middle England word bunt, meaning to butt. I guess lambs butt people? I don't know. The Oxford English Dictionary describes the word bunting also as a term of endearment, meaning swelling or plump, used as a nickname for small children, mostly. And Bunty morphed into an occasionally used first name. So, I don't know. As soon as I saw this name, I kind of thought that sounds like a house elf name. Like, it just does to me.
Yeah.
So I've just had a quick look, and British surnames beginning with Bunt could be like Buntain or Bunton or Bunton Buck or Bunt Rock. Bunting or Bunting is also one, or Buntley. So I do feel like this could be, a bit like Tonks. She doesn't like her first name and someone shortened her second name. Although I really didn't know that thing, because obviously I know what Bunting is, but I never knew Bunting was a nickname. That's kind of cute. And I can also imagine a really posh English person called Bunty, darling, Bunty. I can imagine that so well.
That was amazing.
And it feels quite 20s as well, actually. Maybe it is a first name, because that does feel like quite a 20s name for someone.
Bunty. Yeah, like, I don't know. I like the idea that it could be a house elf, because maybe she's just the voice, and they're like, oh, you know, casting, it's Bunty, and we have no idea. We think, oh, it's going to be a person that pops up as a house elf, and we're like, oh, because his name is slipping my mind right now.
Ron Perlman.
Thank you. When we found out he was cast, I was thinking in my head, I was like, oh, great, like, he's going to be in the movie. And then he's the voice.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, well, that works too. So this could be another one of those instances where they give us casting, but it's not for a human, like you said. So
yeah,
that would be good.
Yeah, and we're seeing good and interesting. So many characters with old wizarding names that there is a strong chance one of them will have a house elf. So yeah, we could see one.
Yeah. That would have to be a rather significant house elf, though, for them to, like, release it, and it's not just a house elf with, like, one line.
Yeah, true. For them to announce the casting, especially because it's, like, Ron Perlman was a bit of, like, a name drop, you know, that's a pretty big actor to get, and especially as, like, one scene, and obviously, I think it was a bit of mocap as well, but I think that was, a real, like, cameo part.
Yeah, they did that.
Whereas Jessica Williams is, not Jessica Williams, whoops, sorry, backtrack. I'm looking at the next one. I'm sorry. Whereas like Victoria Yates is, she's done well on British TV, but she's not Ron Perlman. So
yeah.
I think, yeah. But you never know. We could see someone.
Maybe we've got another Dobby on our hands.
Oh no, don't do that. That might be terrible.
A Dobby with a happy ending.
Yeah.
How about she's not a house elf, but a beast talk, maybe? I don't know if that works.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be nice to see one of Newt's beasts able to talk, because there are quite a few that can talk. So that'd be quite cool.
Mm-hmm.
After all, it's called Fantastic Beasts and not Fantastic House Elves.
True. Although we don't know if it's called Fantastic Beasts.
Do you think they're changing the title completely?
Yeah, to Fantastic House Elves.
Yes, you've got me convinced.
Yeah, I think that's definitely it. So also cast was Jessica Williams from The Daily Show and Fiona Glasscock from Resident Evil and the film adaptation of Brooklyn. But no roles for them have been released yet, so we don't know who they play.
Although there's been some, like, guesswork going on for Jessica Williams, hasn't there, like?
Yes.
Yeah, so yes. J.K. Rowling tweeted, so Jessica was freaking out on Twitter, as I think any of us would if we got cast in Fantastic Beasts. And J.K. Rowling responded to that tweet saying, there's no purple heron emoji, so here's, and she put like an owl emoji and some love hearts. So I think there was some chat underneath that tweet actually about whether she could be an animagus. And Jessica Williams is an American actress with Cameroon heritage. So there is a possibility, because we're seeing already quite a few people that could potentially be from other Hogwarts houses, that we might see the African school. And I've forgotten how to pronounce it, because Pottermore does provide a very nice pronunciation. Wagadu, there, yeah. There we go. But yeah, so there's a possibility we could be seeing someone, her from the African school Wagadu. And the only reason I think that's particularly come up is because the purple heron emoji or comment from Joe could be referenced to an animagus. So in Pottermore, the article about Wagadu says, at a recent international symposium of animagi, the Wagadu school team attracted a lot of press when their exhibition of synchronized transforming caused a near riot. Many older and more experienced witches and wizards felt threatened by 14-year-olds who could turn into elephants and cheetahs, or turn at will into elephants and cheetahs, and a formal complaint was lodged by the International Confederation of Wizards by Adrian Tutley. And I love, in brackets, it says, animagus, gerbil. So there is a possibility she could be an animagus, not necessarily from Wagadu, but could just also be a proficient purple heron animagus, but also could just be a casual reference to Joe's own Pottermore Patronus. Obviously, that is just a heron and not a purple heron, but maybe she's it's a red herring, possibly.
Yeah. And that may fit in with Africa, because that bird is obviously seen a lot in Africa. So, you know, an animagus form of that type of bird would make sense if you live in Africa. Because if you're like an, you know, like in Europe, it makes sense to be like a cat, because there's cats everywhere. You know, if you try to be sneaky with an animagus form and not to be like, look at me, I'm here. Then yes.
Yeah, you couldn't have really been like a marauder running around the Hogwarts grounds if you were like an elephant.
Yes.
Oh, goodness. I just remember seeing when Jessica Williams and J.K. Rowling were starting to hang out. And I was like, man, that's so cool. But not once was like, what if she's in Fantastic Beasts 2? And now that that happens, I'm like, well, Is that why they started hanging out, or they were hanging out and J.K. Rowling was like, she's got to do this role, and she, you know, spoke with the casting directors. Like, I have no idea what happened. I know they always say like writers have no say in the casting, but she very well could have written a part for Jessica Williams. Like, she's like, oh wait, hold on, here's the script. I revised it, so let me show you what I did. And they're like, who's this new character?
They share the same
birthday and everything.
I can't see Jo writing a character for someone. I think she has such clear ideas of, like, her stories are so her, and, like, obviously, I don't think that she's obviously had this whole 5-film arc pitched out, which she obviously didn't, because she was 3 films, but, like, it's still definitely canon. But I think she wouldn't create a role for someone just for the sake of creating a role. But there is a strong possibility that she wrote this character, and then maybe she met Jessica Williams, or they were chatting on Twitter, and she thought she could be perfect for it.
True.
Yeah, and they definitely would listen to her, be like, and I mean, we even know from the Harry Potter films that she was like, I want this actor to play this role, because that's just how I picture it.
Yeah, and she's also a producer on the film, so she's not just a writer. She has
a little more power.
Plus,
let's be real, if she said, let's have a look at this actress, at least like call her in for casting or something, people would do that.
Oh yeah.
They would not be like, no, you don't have any say in that.
When when you were saying about the Jessica and Joe hanging out more, how long has that been going on for? Like, I hadn't noticed that until like she got cast, that tweet stuff.
I remembered they shared their birthday. Like, they hung out together.
Oh, that's right. They were having, like, as far as I understood, they were friends long before that. That's just one of the times they actually met in person.
Hmm.
Or, like, hung out in person. That's how I understood it.
I'm not sure, like, you could be right. I'm just saying I personally have no idea what was going on. I just remember Jessica Williams, like, talking on Twitter, like, freaking out, essentially, that J.K. Rowling was having a conversation with her. And this was within the past year or so, I think. And then they posted that picture of them having their birthday dinners together. And that was when I was really like, oh, like, they're hanging out. And then when the casting news came out, I was like, oh, they're doing the movie together.
See, it would strongly suggest, like, that, you know, they're quite a few weeks into filming now and casting takes place before filming. Like, there's a strong possibility that this casting was all done earlier this year. And obviously, like, Jo's birthday is July, so she could have been cast by that point quite easily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So going off of the possibility of Jessica Williams' character having been a graduate of or going to school at Wagadu, I have a somewhat crazy theory that we'll see more, at least graduates of other wizarding schools, which from this casting list, we may not be seeing it in this film necessarily go to those other places, but maybe it's laying the groundwork. I mean, we've said that it's probably going to be some more world traveling going on. But here's my theory. I'll walk you through. I've got sticky notes. They're all laying on my desk. I was like going crazy making these connections last night. So we've got several people from Hogwarts, obviously. Newt, Leeta, you know, lots of people went to Hogwarts. Also Bunty. If she's human, that's a Scottish-English name, like we had discussed. So maybe she went to Hogwarts as well. But then we also have Rosier, which is a French name. Travers is a French name, too. We talked about Poppy Corby-Touche, who plays Rosier, is a French actress. So maybe Rosier went to Beauxbatons. Maybe Travers went to Beauxbaton. Could be. So we might see that. We know we're going to be in Paris for this film, at least.
Yeah, the actress cast as Rosier is French-English, so as you said. So there is a possibility she could be French. I don't think Travers will be French because that actor is very Scottish.
yeah, that one's a little less likely.
But actually on the Beauxbaton front, I think Philmel. There's a whole load of stuff that off the top of my head I can't remember, but he's heavily involved with Beauxbaton. I think that was in the discussion in the other podcast. So I think Beauxbaton will definitely be mentioned.
Oh yeah, definitely. But then we've also got some ties possibly to Durmstrang, which we know is either in the northernmost region of Norway or Sweden. So I'm thinking maybe Spielman, because he is played by a German actor. So maybe Spielman went to Durmstrang. Also Grindelwald went to Durmstrang.
Maybe they knew each other at school.
Oh, you know, Spielman is Grindelwald. That whole theory.
Yes, that too. They are the same person.
Everyone is Grindelwald.
They're just going to do that in every movie now. They're like, yeah, this was actually Grindelwald, so we don't have to see Johnny Depp as much.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, me too.
And then moving on to our other person who might be Grindelwald. So Guzman, which is a Spanish surname, which is obviously Spain's right next to Portugal. Portugal actually colonized Brazil. So Kessler Bruxo, I think that's how you say it, Kessler Bruxo, the Brazilian wizarding school is, you know, that's a possibility. That might be a tie because maybe the surname Guzman came over from Europe to Brazil back when it was colonized, and Guzman maybe went to Kessler Bruxo. So that's my crazy theory.
I don't think it's crazy at all. I think it's very, very likely. I think when you look at that map that Pottermore released of all the wizarding schools around the world, they very conveniently all sit in sort of the biggest markets for Harry Potter. But Harry Potter right. is massive in Brazil, it's huge in Japan and China. And then, I don't know much about the fandom across Africa, but I guess if you're going to have schools in nearly every continent, that would make sense. So yeah, I feel like with 5 films, they're going to go to every single one so that the whole fandom can feel good because there's a school near them. So yeah, I think it's very, very likely that, you know, I don't know if we'll continue in Europe in Fantastic Beasts 3, but potentially we could go to Africa or Asia or South America. So yeah, it's going to be, I don't think we'll ever see any of the schools, although we might go back to Hogwarts. But right. I do think we'll definitely start seeing people from the different schools and mention them. And they'll, a bit like how they just casually mentioned Hogwarts and Ilvermorny in the first one, I think that's how it's going to mm-hmm. play out in the rest of it. But yeah, it's cool. Right. It's very exciting.
Like we get the Ilvermorny theme song. Like, do the other schools have theme songs?
Will it be as cheesy as the Ilvermorny one?
I'm so confused about Durmstrang as a whole. Yeah, because, you know, like, Grindelwald, probably, like, native German speaker, like, coming from Austria, Switzerland, or Germany. And then, you know, like, Durmstrang is supposed to be in Norway. They don't speak German there. Like, how do people go to school at 11 when it's probably not even taught in their own language? Like, how does that work? And, you know, like, being, like, Durmstrang being, like, the school for, like, whole of, like, mainland Europe, that doesn't work because every country has their own language, so.
To be fair, I guess you get the same with, like, the African school being Ouagadougou, like, the number of languages you get in just any one country in Africa is very broad. Mm-hmm. So, I guess there are limitations with this of just, like, in reality, you'd probably have a school per country, but J.K. Rowling is probably not going to create that. Or maybe you wouldn't. Maybe the Wizarding World population is so small, and maybe in places like South America and in African countries, the populations didn't congregate in the same way that they might have done in the UK.
But even if it could work for South America, I mean, it's only Brazil where they speak Portuguese. All the other countries in South America speak Spanish. And, you know, like, Portuguese people can understand Spanish. So
yeah,
I don't see that much of a stretch there to have like one big school. I
maybe the whole
very
of Durmstrang.
Much a stretch in Europe.
Yeah. Maybe Durmstrang's taught in Latin, just all Latin, and they just have to go back to that.
So people have to learn like Latin.
Maybe they just
for
settle.
Level.
Maybe they like know what language the school's going to be taught, and then they just teach that to their kids ahead of time. I don't know.
But what if you're like an orphan or a muggle born and you don't know that?
Then you're out of luck. You don't get to learn magic.
And then, you know, there's a point obviously where Karkaroff is the headmaster of that school. Karkaroff speaks English.
Yeah.
And he's a Death Eater, so he's probably been in Britain a lot. So, I mean, it just doesn't really work out. I don't like Durmstrang. It's too much of a mystery for me. Because, you know, we have Beauxbatons, and that's probably French only, because that's how the Frenchies are.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, the European politics has snuck in again.
Does anyone know that, like, I hated French at school? Because I did. Anyways.
I mean, actually, if you go back through, like, British, American, European, or just world history, the chances of, there being just like one British school and a French school and a North American school is quite likely, whereas actually the chance that some of the other schools might be a bit broader because they could be younger schools is also a chance. Like, it does kind of work with the sort of British history of just like, we're going to have a school for us, and similarly with France. But I just think seeing more of that is going to be cool, and just hints of it. And also there's just more room for them to do merchandise, which they love doing, right? So the scope grows.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's not a lot of merchandise out for, you know, like Ilvermorny.
No, I'm surprised, actually. I feel like they would do more, but...
Even, like, Beauxbatons stuff, like, stuff that we've seen, obviously, in the Harry Potter movies, that's not... Like, you can't really easily access that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But if this fandom, if this, the way these films go is to cover all the fandoms, you'll see more of that. Just like when I was in Osaka and went to the Japanese Wizarding World, the merchandise there was completely different to the merchandise you can get in the US and the UK because it adapted culturally. So Japan is a very strong gift giving culture. A friend out there has to like take lots of stuff to do lots of little presents a lot. And in the one of the shops, there were so many little knick-knacky type stuff that would be like really ideal, relatively cheap gifts. So they've adapted the gifts there. And also like some of the stuff you see in America is slightly different to the stuff you see in the UK. So I feel like they definitely adapt the merchandise. Well, they definitely do adapt the merchandise to the certain areas that they're in. And I feel like as these, as the films grow, like at the moment they've only had one success. And you know, if the second one flops, then the other three might be at risk. But I think if they, you know, they do go to the full five, it does really well. Especially if, you know, if Brazil gets featured or Japan gets featured, it'll probably then do really well in those countries. And I think that's when they'll start boosting out the merchandise. But anyway, that's slightly unrelated to our our main news discussion topic. Should we go Time Turner?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. We've already talked about time turning today. Well, okay. I prefer the TARDIS, but so yeah, let's twist, spin the Time Turner all the way back to 1927. And today's Time Turner will be all about the Muggle art of flying, or, you know, aeroplanes, because the year 1927 was actually pretty exciting if you're like an aeroplane geek, I suppose, because I just Googled all that stuff and I was like, okay, there's a lot out there. Because in that sort of like time period and like 1927 specifically, there was a prize money out for the first person to cross the Atlantic between New York City and Paris, which, you know, is exciting because that's like the cities we've seen or will be seen in Fantastic Beasts. For that prize money, it didn't matter if you go from like New York to Paris or Paris to New York. It was just like it had to be those two cities because those were like the biggest cities around that time area, apparently. And there had been flights between crossing the Atlantic, but not specifically between those two cities. Like, no one had achieved that yet. So there was a prize money, and obviously, like, people tried to compete and win that money because it was a lot of money. In fact, I have it somewhere here how much it was. I think, yes, it was $25,000 that time, which would be $330,000 our time. Ooh. Like, ooh, that is a lot of money. You know,
I would not complain about that.
Yeah, but then, you know, like, I as I've been thinking about it, it was like probably like all the equipment and stuff that you have to buy to actually do that. You're probably not ending up with a lot of money. But, you know,
it's all about the fame. It's being there, the first person to do it, isn't it?
Yes. So, and in May 1927, there have been two attempts, one being successful, one not so much. And they're both like pretty exciting, and I want to talk more at length about it. So the first attempt was on the 8th of May, attempted by two French aviators. They wanted to also travel from Paris to New York. And those two flyers actually have quite the history there. So I'm just going to go into it a bit. So one of them was, I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Charles Nochesy, born March 15 in 1892. And he was the first earned international he earned first international fame as a World War I fighter pilot. With 45 confirmed kills to his credit, he was France's third ranking ace and among the top 20 aces from all the nations. So, quite good. he was also a much publicized hard-partying ladies' man, rumored to have concerted with the infamous Dutch exotic dancer and presumptive German spy, Mata Hari. So, good for him, I suppose. a bit like a Guller, Gilderoy Lockhart is what I got as an impression from him, because he apparently had a lot of like war wounds, and they were so extensive that his case history could have provided an entire textbook on the treatment of traumatic injuries. But yet, for like all the crippling pain and physical limitations these injuries imposed upon him, he continued to fly, often having to be lifted into and out of the cockpit. And so that was dedication right there. And his injuries were only matched by his numerous medals and awards, which he wore even when flying. We're just like, come on, man. Like, I'm not even able to walk, but I'm going to wear all my medals. Okay, that's cool. So, yeah, I assume he is probably slightly arrogant. His fellow companion on this mission was François Cully. He was 11 years older than Nonchassier, and never achieved the same level of fame, but he was still a very successful wartime fighter pilot, and he's also sustained grievous injuries, including the loss of one of his eyes in a crash, so he had only one eye left. And he was also a very accomplished navigator, and he's broken some other records previous to their attempt of flying from Paris to New York. And those two were basically the men trying to get this prize money. And Cully actually planned this trip in 1923, so 4 years prior he started planning this big venture. And they planned to go from Paris to New York, even if that meant going against the favored direction, because most pilots favored riding the prevailing westerly winds from New York City to Paris. But Cully preferred to go the other way, because that meant that the most difficult part of the trip would be overland, because that's like the last bit going down from the coast of Canada down to New York City. And that like additional safety outweighed the disadvantage of going against the headwind. But unfortunately, they left on May the 8th. Apparently, they successfully crossed the channel, the British Channel, flew over Britain and over Ireland, and then they are lost. Like, they never made it to New York City, and no one actually knows what happened. There's been apparently a lot of investigations at that time, but they're obviously very limited when it comes to planes like that, and they didn't have radar, so they couldn't be found. So no one knows what happened. They're just mystery.
Ooh, pretty miserable.
So that was the first, that was the first attempt in May, an unsuccessful one at that. But on May 21st, an American pilot called Charles Augustus Lindbergh successfully flew from New York City to Paris in the first solo nonstop transatlantic flight and the first ever nonstop flight between New York and Paris. And it took him 33 and a half hours. Like, ooh, imagine that.
No.
Today it's like 8 hours.
No, thank you.
And the story behind his flight record is also really interesting, so I'm going to go into him a bit. Charles Augustus Lindbergh was born in 1902 in Detroit and took up flying at the age of 20. And in 1923, he toured the country as a barnstorming stunt flyer. In 1924, he enrolled in the Army Air Service Flying School in Texas and graduated at the top of his class as first lieutenant. He became an airmail pilot in 1926 and pioneered the route between St. Louis and Chicago. Among U.S. aviators, he was highly regarded, but even, you know, like looking at his history and his achievements and then compared to the two French aviators, it kind of pales. You know, like, he was a post flyer, basically, whereas the other two were really highly regarded and decorated war pilot. Bad weather delayed his transatlantic attempt for a week, so he had tried to do it a week earlier. And on the night of May 19th, nerves and a newspaper's noisy poker game kept him up all night, so he didn't sleep at all. And early the next morning, though he had not slept, the skies were clear, and he rushed to the airport in Long Island and started his attempt. So he took off at 7:52 a.m. on May 20th with his plane called the Spirit of St. Louis. Lifted up from Roosevelt Field, so loaded with fuel that he barely cleared the telephone wires at the end of the runway. So off to a good start there. He then traveled northeast up the coast. After only 4 hours, he felt tired because, you know, he didn't sleep. And flew within 10 feet of the water to keep his mind clear. I don't know if that is the way to do it, but okay. As night fell, the aircraft left the coast of Newfoundland and set off across the Atlantic. And at about 2 a.m. on May 21st, he passed the halfway mark, and an hour later, dawn came. Soon after, the Spirit of St. Louis entered a fog, and Lindbergh struggled to stay awake, holding his eyelids open with his fingers and hallucinating that ghosts were passing through his cockpit.
Oh my God.
After 24 hours in the air, he felt a little more awake. I don't know why, but okay.
And, he got used to it.
he spotted fishing boats in the water. And about 11 a.m., he saw the coast of Ireland. So already made it across the Atlantic. And despite using only rudimentary navigation to, you know, keep the weight of the plane down, he was 2 hours ahead of schedule and only 3 miles off course. He flew past England, and about 8 p.m. local time, he was flying over France. And then at the Le Bourget Aerodrome in Paris, tens of thousands of Saturday night revelers had gathered to await Lindbergh's arrival. And at 10:24 a.m. local time, his plane finally landed on the Paris airport. And he was... he was like 33 and a half hours in the air, but all on like on the whole, he hadn't slept for 55 hours.
Oh my gosh.
Oh no. No.
55 hours. But he obviously became an immediate international celebrity for that achievement and got all the prize money.
It's crazy how we kind of take it for granted now. Like, I'm just like,
yeah.
Flying to Chicago, it's going to take 2 hours. And it's like, that's nothing. Like, that is really nothing. Like, back then, it probably apparently would have taken 5 days just to fly to Chicago. So
I can barely stand like an hour on a plane.
Yeah. Imagine like
I would
over
have been
a day.
Seeing ghosts.
No,
no, I don't want to.
Like, even if you like fly from like I don't know Germany to New Zealand, which is like all the way to the other end of the world, it takes 26 hours all in all. So
I need like
nowadays,
a private
obviously.
Plane to do that.
But even like think about it, 26 hours for like half around the world, and it took 33 and a half hours for only like crossing the Atlantic between New York City and Paris.
I thoroughly enjoy this thread line throughout the whole of this podcast, all about travel and traveling around the world. It's great.
Yeah. Look at that. I mean, planned right from the get-go.
Yes. So nothing that I think we will probably see in Fantastic Beasts 2, because I don't think they will cover planes.
But they might explain how aeroplanes work.
So all the Arthur Weasleys be among us. But I thought it was just really cool, because I think the second movie is taking place in 27, isn't it? Am I completely
wrong? Yeah, 27, not long after the last film.
Yeah. And, you know, that obviously being between Paris and New York City. So obviously being between France and East American. That's quite cool.
Mm-hmm. So that's it for this episode of Speak Beastie. Our podcast question, just tell us what your character theories are. Who do you think Bunty might be? Could Rosier be Druella Rosier? Just basically anything that we told you, you know, who could Jessica Williams possibly be playing? Anything that comes to mind about what we said, or even if there's new casting information that comes out between the time that we record and the time that the episode comes out, as is the case. We'd love to hear from you, so drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbc@gmail.com. And please leave us a review on iTunes. Be honest, but also be nice. So, just
for the
Hufflepuffs
here.
And you can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie, or Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie. We're also on Tumblr, speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can support the show at Patreon and join our common room and all the exciting things that come with that at patreon.com/SpeakBeastie. And also check on our website at speakbeastie.com for all the latest news, and of course mugglenet.com for even more latest news on the Fantastic Beasts series.
I'm Aurelia.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Claire.
And I'm Amy.
Case closed.
On track, hop in the DeLorean.
It's a car, not a train. It doesn't go on tracks. Sorry.
Semantics. Racetracks. There's racetracks. So
there's tracks maybe. On the Hogwarts Express, so I'll take that one.
Oh god. This is so not what this is about.
So hold on tight. This might be a 4-hour episode.
Yes. And not loaded. Only because we are always going off track, so.
Yeah. Racetracks or train tracks? Train
tracks. See, that's the next thing. We are on different tracks.
Here we are. Oh, God.